a part of us loving each other is, I don't know if this is the easy part, I don't know how to say this, is learning to deal with each other face to face. Loving each other, loving one another, means knowing somebody, getting close enough to somebody that they can, that you can do what Jesus said to do. Words like accept, words like forgive, words like be kind or encourage or exhort. Those words are done when it's face-to-face time. And we've got some face-to-face time today. And we've tried over and over again, we've tried to make this a place, I'm not claiming we have, but we've tried to make this place a place where people could come in and rest. And people that could come in, rest, have a chance to heal, so then they can begin to grow and then go to serve. What I need before we start our exercise, before we do our study, I need you to tell me, for those of us who have been here a little while, what benefit has that approach been to you? Don't say to anybody else, to you. What's the benefit of having that approach that we're going to accept people? I didn't say agree, didn't say approve, but we're going to accept people when they come here. We're going to give them a chance to rest. What benefit has that been to you?
It allows me to apply it in my everyday life.
Okay. What you can do, a lot of times you listen better. When you're not all tense, you're not all afraid, you're not all upset or worried, you get a chance to rest, then you receive more. You can hear better.
You know that family I took in?
Huh?
You finally got a drill
and drill. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. What benefit has there been to letting people come in here and just rest? What benefit to you?
I know coming here, there wasn't a list of things that I needed to accomplish or needed to do to fit in, to always, you know, stay there or anything like that, where I felt like that. I had to do certain things and certainly not let anybody know about what's going on in my life or struggles that I have, because that I wouldn't fit in the requirements kind of thing. That might not have been true, but that's how I felt.
Yeah.
And but I hadn't felt that at all here, because everybody know, or maybe not everybody, but most people know me and my struggles and everything like that, and it didn't, people still accept me and love me and then are able to still have patience with me and growing and things like that. So.
All right. So there's a benefit to when you came into this place, somebody wasn't standing there saying, I need you to do this, 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 and this, recognizing that some people came here because they were tired. Some people were hurt. Some people were broken. Some people were bruised. They needed a chance to rest. And when they came in, we didn't give them a list of things that had to get done. If they're going to be acceptable to us, if they're going to be welcome in this place, you got no. If you came here, accepted here, rest here.
I would tell them, if you really knew who I was, you wouldn't want to be around. And I had that thought. And so you isolate yourself because you don't really want people to know. And I haven't had that in a long time. Maybe I've forgiven myself, but you don't feel that way.
Good. I want to repeat that because I hear it repeated a lot to me. If you really knew me, fill in the blank. You wouldn't like me. You wouldn't want to be around me. You wouldn't let me come to church here, kind of thing. Well, that's a daily experience in my life, of just from my own mess. So to come to a place where you're not only accepted, celebrated is a great one. I mean, when you get treated like, well, we're glad to see you. Well, that makes a huge difference. Erin?
Well, because of my past with drugs and alcohol, I tried to go to church various places. And like she said, and kind of what a combination of Kelly said also, is it wasn't necessarily that anybody said, well, you can't be here because of this and this. I felt like I couldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept me from going to church and getting to know God the way I have here, just being accepted and loved. And I let my past, the stuff I did, I don't do anymore. But it was just with me all the time, you know. I'm a horrible person because I used to do that, you know. That here I've been able to finally say, no, I'm really not. It's washed away. And I think I was only able to learn that and accept that because of this place and the people here.
I'm going to restate some of these so people can hear it that are listening to us in other places, but... not trying to restate everything everybody says, but I love what Aaron just reminded us of. Sometimes we need confirmation of how God feels about us. We need that confirmation from the people that represent God to us. Some of us, like Aaron, probably could have gone to any church in town and it would have been okay. But because our own sensitivities, our own guilt, our own fear, we made it more difficult to find acceptance or find a place there because we felt so hurt by our own sins. There's others of us, though, and this is true, there's others of us that tried to get into those fellowships, tried to get back in those places, and were mistreated because of our past. And when that happened, all of a sudden you're thinking, God said this to me, I love you and I forgive you, but the people that represent God to you are treating you the exact opposite. That has a bad effect on you. I mean, it's hard to deal with. You know, I'd tell you, and I kept telling myself, listen, it's God you serve. It's God who loves you. It's not about the people. But there's a reason for the people, right? That's why God built the church out of people. Is He wanted them to represent Him. He wanted to show us through those people that He loved us, accepted us, could forgive us. When folks didn't do that, it was real hurtful. So there's a benefit to having, I believe, there's a benefit to us having a place, having a time where people can come and just be accepted, where they can rest. Now tell me, and this, we're going to shift to our study now, tell me why... That's the benefit. Tell me where the weakness in that is. If there is a weakness in that.
You're scared to open up sometimes.
All right. But if you're accepted, you finally learn to open up. You will. It'll take a while. But in this place, I've not seen many of us that weren't finally felt loved enough, accepted enough to open up.
I think sometimes you get so comfortable. It feels so good to be accepted for who you are that you forget that who you are is not who you need to be.
I'm going to ask you to say it again. Say it louder. I want everybody to hear your words for it.
Just that we get so comfortable being who we are and being accepted that we forget that we need to keep changing and getting better. And we just get complacent.
It is an incredible gift from God to be in this place and to be accepted for who we are. But do we want to stay who we are? No, we want to become more like Jesus. Right? I love this place. I do. I've been in places where they made this announcement, please turn all cell phones off, you know, or to mute. Man, think of all the fun we would have missed if people had done that here. I will never make that announcement, I promise. No, not even to you. No. There are people in this room right now. Okay, we don't have visitors, it's just us. There are people in this room right now that are hurt. they're hurt, and I know you, so I'm saying I'm not going to point people out, but they're people that are hurt. They're hurt by their own sin. They've been messing up. They've been struggling. Okay? There are people in this room that are hurting, but they're not hurting as much as they once were because they've begun to make better decisions and they're starting to improve. But it's still they're still feeling very fragile, still very sensitive. There are others that are beginning to heal. I watch you. I know you. You've had a chance to breathe a little bit, chance to rest, and you're starting to heal. And that is a good, good thing. Now, there are others of us that have been here long enough that we've had a chance to rest, we've had a chance to heal, and now it's time for us to grow. We have to understand that there are differences there. We have to make those distinctions, right? Right? Okay, now I want to show you, and we're going to have to jump in a couple of different places. Why don't you look at 1 Thessalonians right now. 1 Thessalonians. I want you to look in chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Now, it's toward the back of your Bible if you're just getting started. So go to Revelation, go to the very end where the maps are, and then start back. And go back to your left. Okay? Because everybody's going to get a chance to find it. And the speed with which you find a passage does not say anything about your spirituality. All right? It doesn't say anything about your maturity in the Lord. Some of us have just, we were there when these books were even put in this order, and we learned them early on. So everybody got 1 Thessalonians? Don't you find 1 Thessalonians? And if somebody's having a tough time finding it, in this place, don't feel embarrassed. Let somebody help you find it. Because that's how you learn. 1 Thessalonians 5, 18:20, if you got a good giant print Bible. In fact, I could show you, just look at my Bible, all right? Here we go. Got it? And some of us know where the books are, some of us just don't have our bifocals on, okay? Here we go. 1 Thessalonians 5, I want you to look at verse 14, okay? We urge you, brothers, warn those who are idle. Encourage the timid. Help the weak. Be patient with everyone. Four statements. One statement applies to everybody. One statement applies to everybody. Which one is it? Be patient with everyone. That applies to everybody. That applies to the person who just walked in that can't breathe, doesn't know whether they ought to be here or not, doesn't know how we're going to react to them. I love it. I love it when somebody comes here and they don't know, they have no idea how we're going to treat them. And all of a sudden they find there's a place where you can actually, people accept you and they kind of like you to be there. I mean, that applies to that person as well as to the person who was here on the very first day. You be patient with everyone. Now, what does that imply? What does being patient with everyone imply?
Love.
That you mean it.
That you'll need it.
That you'll need it. You're going to have to be patient with me. Because God's not finished with me yet. I'm going to have to be patient with you because God's not finished with you yet. We're going to need patience with everybody. Well, you've been in this church long enough. No. You don't take that approach. We're going to be patient with everyone. We're going to need it. That's a good way to say it. Now, give me, who is it though? How would you classify from that verse? How would you classify the person that comes here for the first time? The first two times? The first three times? From that verse, who would you think? Yeah, encourage the timid. Why would they be timid?
Because
They don't know anybody here, maybe. Or they just don't want it. In fact, usually when you show up here, it's because somebody invited you, so you may only know one person. So why would they be timid? They don't know how we're going to react. They don't know what to expect. Why would they be timid? It's new to them. Why would they be timid?
They don't want to stand out like a sore thumb.
Who they don't want to stand out. If you've ever committed public sin where you were so embarrassed and so ashamed of yourself that you couldn't breathe, when you walk into a place that's called a church, and you go into like a real church, big church, do you know what you feel? You feel like everybody knows exactly who you are and what you've done. There's no way. I'm telling you, there's no way they can see it. But what are your feelings? It's just, you've got your antenna up, and if somebody looks at you funny, immediately you react to it like they did something wrong to you. They didn't. It was your emotions, your guilt, your fear. You were timid. But what are we supposed to do with the timid, y'all? Read the Word. Encourage them. Now, what does that mean? What does encourage mean? Now, we've talked about it here. The simplest way to define encourage is to just turn it over. Put courage in someone. Now, how do you do that with somebody timid? Exercise for me. How do you do that with somebody timid?
I wish Chelsea was here, because she always tells a story about the first week she came. She said she was not going to talk to anybody. Like, her plan was to come in late, to leave early, and she just tried so hard to make sure that's how it happened. And on her way out, Justin caught her and just talked to her. And she said that she connected with one person, and then the next week, she felt more comfortable to come because she connected with one person, but she didn't want to connect. I think sometimes encouraging is to kind of draw people out.
How do you do that?
I think for me, the first time I came with Lisa, and I did not really want to come, honestly, because I was like, whatever. This is just another stupid church that I'm going to hate. But I had I really enjoyed it, and then the next day, Lisa called me, and she was like, I'm so glad you came to church with me. Do you want to go with me Wednesday and you can ride with me? Just come to my house. And I was kind of like, all right, yeah, I guess I'll go again. Because it wasn't horrible. So I went, and every time I would go to church, Lisa or Aaron one would say, I'm glad you came to church. Do you want to go again? And it just kept on from there.
I could. Notice what they were doing. They were making it as simple as possible. When somebody's timid, when somebody's bruised, when somebody's hurting. I had a guy actually say to me, in the midst of my darkest moments, a group of men said to me, well, why didn't you come tell us? Because I was over in the ditch, beat up by my own sins, left for dead. The Samaritan, when he picked up the old boy, didn't stand on the road and say, get over here, get over here. Why don't you call over here and get on this donkey? No, make it simple for people. I love that Lisa and Aaron and them said, you can ride with us. Just come. Just come. This place is not, no, this doesn't suit everybody's taste. This part of town, this building.
There's not much room to hide.
You can't hardly hide here. Now, we do have a closet back there where we put some people that... All right. There are people in this room that are timid. They need to be treated that way. How do you treat someone who's timid?
With love.
With love. How do you treat them?
With love.
Gently. There you go. All right. Now... flip that over, though. Look at the other side of that coin. You're going to encourage the timid, but what else are you going to do? Go to the other side. Go to the extreme.
Slap in the air.
Warn those who are idle. Warn those who are idle. Okay, now what does the word warn mean? What does the word warn mean?
Look out for danger.
Look out for danger. And who is it that's in danger? Look at the text. Those who are idle. There are some people that need to be warned. Now, that's... I wanted you to see all of those. You help help weak people because they need help. You encourage timid folks because they need courage. You warn idle people because they need a warning. Now, did you notice? Is there a difference between encouraging somebody who's weak and or encouraging the timid and warning the idle? Is there a difference?
Yes.
What's the difference? Now, it's too easy to say yes. Now you got to explain why. What's the difference? What's the difference between encouraging the weak and warning the idle?
The weak want to do it. The idle just sit there.
Weak don't necessarily want to do it. So what's the difference between encouraging the timid and warning the idle? Yeah, there's a confrontation when it comes to warning somebody. Now, are you... the word confront means to go against. You're getting in their face, so it may be fronting them. But you warn them means what?
Correction.
Correction. Warn means what?
With the timid, like if you're encouraging someone and building them up, if you're warning someone who's idle, there's possibly a sense of tearing down pride, so there may be hurt involved.
All right.
Judgment.
The word encourage means to stand at their side. But if I'm going to warn somebody, what am I going to do? I've got to get in front of them. I've got to say, brother, you don't want to go this direction. And that does not mean you take a confrontational stance. The word con on confront doesn't fit in the church. Because con means against. Pros or cons? Con means against. We're not against anybody, but you got to front somebody every once in a while, right? Sometimes that's what that if we love each other, we got to exercise that a little bit.
You can confront them with your own experience.
And Joe took us right to the next passage. I want you to look in Galatians. I want you to look in Galatians chapter 6. Just turn back from the left. Start from 1 Thessalonians and turn back and you'll go through you'll go through a little book called Colossians, and then you'll go through a book called Philippians, and then you'll go through a book called Ephesians, and you'll get to Galatians. Look in Galatians chapter 6. One of the things... weakness is not the right word, but one of the areas where we need to be concerned, one of the areas where we need to have some exercise here. We always want to accept. We always want to encourage. We always want to be people that give people a chance to rest and to heal. That's what gave this place its life. That's what it's its strength. Let's keep doing that. But there's an area of concern that sometimes you can slide in, get comfortable, and stay where you are rather than growing to what God wants you to be. Sometimes you've got to recognize that. All right? Now, listen, I'm going to ask you this so many times you're going to hate me. Tell me, is warning for everyone? No. No, it's not for everyone. It's for only those people who need it. So this is not a blanket thing that you apply to everybody. No, it means you and I got to have make some decision. We got to use some judgment. We'll look in Galatians 6. Galatians chapter 6. Brothers, if someone is caught in a sin, that ever happen in this place? Yeah, it does happen. It has happened. A brother is caught in a sin. You who are spiritual should restore him gently. Okay, a couple of things there. One of the first things, if we were discussing this, I'd say, okay, those of you who are spiritual, you're going to go restore this brother. Most people in this room would do what? I'd say, all you spiritual people, hold up your hand. And most of you would still be sitting on your hands. You wouldn't hold up your hand. What's he talking about? Those of you who are spiritual. What does it mean? I'm sorry? Trying to do right? Those of you who are spiritual. Those in the body? Those of you who are spiritual. Maybe more knowledge? Well, those of you who are spiritual. How would you define it?
A little more mature.
Maybe more mature? Those of you who are spiritual.
You're trying to have a spirit.
You're trying to have, right? Good.
You're wanting that spirit, and you're trying to apply that spirit.
All right. Those of you who are spiritual means you want what helps that brother not. It's not a carnal thing, it's a spiritual thing. Those of us who, it doesn't necessarily mean those who are smarter or better. That's how we've defined it. Those of you who are better than anybody else in this church, and we want you to go help this guy out. Well, guess what? You're going to be waiting a long time. Those of you who are spiritual are those of you that can approach this brother like the Lord would. Can you be weak and still approach a brother like the Lord would? Can you be struggling and still approach a brother like the Lord would? Yes. Those of you who are spiritual, restore him. What does the word restore mean? What does the word restore mean? Bring back to its original condition. Those of you who are spiritual, I want you. Those of you who want this brother to have what he had when he was in fellowship the first time, I want you to go get him and do it how? Restore him gently. Now, what does gently mean? What does gently mean? Carefully? Gently. What does it mean? Loving? Gently. Understanding that he's fragile? Slowly? All those are good answers. All those are good answers. Means you've got to be careful. You got a little dog at your house. It runs out in the street. A car hits it. Ah, dog is yelping, barking. You run out to the street to pick up. You're going to pick up your puppy and take him off the road, get him to the vet. You start to pick that. How do you do it?
Gently.
Now I watched mama dogs just get their babies by the scruff of the neck and drag them. Is that how we do it? No, he said, do it gently. Now, when you do that, when you do pick that puppy up gently, it means you're trying not to cause more hurt, right? Now, when you do it, what's liable to happen? That dog's liable to bite you. I've watched it in our churches. Well, we tried to go by and visit Sister so-and-so, and she was hateful to us. And so we're just not going back. Well, bless your little heart, you little old... spiritual leaders, you just got your feelings hurt. Well, just go back home and pout. No. Watch somebody who has been run over, somebody that's broken or bruised by their own sins or the sins of somebody else, are both hurt. Elder called me one time and he was talking about a situation in the family. And he said, what do we do? I said, the person that's hurt needs to be treated gently. And they said, well, we're trying to do... And he was talking about the innocent person. He said, well, we're trying to treat her that way. And I said, hey, you missed my point. Who is hurt as much or more? The person that committed the sin. Because they have guilt on their heart too. They went through the same hurt, but they added guilt to theirs, judgment from God on theirs. You do that gently. Now, how are they going to react? I told you, and if you've been in with me for catch, you've heard the story. Guy's name was Clint. Shot a nail into the end of his index finger. Accidentally, of course. Went down about that far in his knuckle. They went to the emergency room. They pulled it out. That finger swelled up about like that. They put it in a splint, wrapped it up. Had to leave the end open so it would drain. Not a good thing. I see him early on a Sunday morning at big church. He comes walking down the hall. I see him. I haven't heard about the accident. So I'm like, hey, Clint, how you doing, man? And he, as he gets closer to me, he's about where Rex is right now. And I reach down to shake his hand. He extends his hand. Extend your hand, Rex. Rex is me. Me is Rex. I'll be Clint for this, all right? Can you imagine what the people listening to this on podcast are going, Rex and Rex? Rex is losing it. Yep, he is. Sorry. If Rex is me, Clint would... We almost touched hands. We're about that far apart. And Clint realizes that if I shake his hand, I'm going to squeeze on that finger. And so he goes, ah! He jumps back, holds his finger, and people are looking at me like I did something to him. I didn't touch him. I promise I didn't touch him. But people that are bruised will act that way. So what do you got to do? You got to be gentle. It's got to be gentle. Well, if they got upset about that, then that's just their own fault. Well, we can take that approach if we want to, but where does that leave them? It still leaves them broken and bruised.
I'm going to tell a story, and I may not should, but I'm talking about that. Back when I got divorced the first time, I had an elder and his wife come see me from Sunset. And he sat there with his wife, who said nothing, and told me that the chances were very great that my son would become a homosexual because I was getting divorced. That just about killed him. And there was no encouragement. It was just like guilt. Up to the moment they left, and so I get on the phone, call my family, and I'm just crying, and you can't get past that kind of stuff.
Well, it makes it hard to get past it, doesn't it? The point is, folks, we do it gently. Now, we've discussed it, so I'm not going to rehearse it. We're done for today. But I wanted us to hear this. I'm glad that we at least want to be a people where people can be accepted and people can come here and rest. But I also know that it's time for some of us, it is time for some of us to take some responsibility to making sure that the weak get the help they need, the timid get the encouragement they need, and the idle get the warning they need. Now, in that case, when it's time to warn the idle, how do we approach them?
Gently.
We approach them gently. Now look at the last part of that verse. But watch yourself, or you also may be tempted. It's not about us making sure everybody knows what they're supposed to do is right. No. It's us caring enough about them that we tell them what they need to hear so they can be what God wants them to be. They can come back to that original state. All right? Now, we talked the other night about if a brother sins against you, the way to handle it. And we need to exercise this here. We've had people hurt because it wasn't. Person sins against you, you go talk to them, but it says you go alone. We've had people in this room, hurt because someone knew about a situation and they, instead of going and talking to that person alone, privately, they made sure other people knew about the problem. Now, their motive was they wanted everybody to know about it so they could be praying. No, Bible says if you know that, what do you do? If you know that, what do? You go to the person alone. I don't know. I don't know any particular places in the Bible that says the number of people praying for something makes a difference with God. I had 72 people praying for this. No. Now, it's okay to let people know what to pray for, but if it's a problem with you and a brother or you and a sister, go to that person alone. Okay? Now, how do you go to them? Put everything we've studied together. How do you go to them?
Gently.
with gentleness. If there is a warning that's needed, warn. If it's encouragement that's needed, encourage. If it's help that's needed, help. But you go to that person alone. You don't tell everybody else. If they listen to you, then the only two people that know about it are you and that person. And it ends there. It's over. If they don't listen, then you take one or two with you. One or two with you, and then you go. Now, I've been in church long enough to know we teach this almost like it's a procedure to follow. Well, are you followed the steps of discipline? Have you followed the procedure of discipline? Procedure, my eye. It's about loving somebody enough to help them go to heaven. And if you need to talk to a brother to help him go to heaven, you go talk to him. Not everybody else in town. Talk to him. If he doesn't listen and you love him, you really care about him, then you take a couple of folks with you, one or two folks with you, and you sit down with him and you plead. Now, you go good cop, bad cop? I've seen that. No, that's, you go both be gentle. It's about restoring him. It's not about making him feel bad. It's restoring him. All right? And then if he doesn't listen then we have to do other things. And basically says tell the church and then we all go plead with him. And if he doesn't listen, then he doesn't want to be in fellowship with us. Then we've got to acknowledge that he doesn't have fellowship with God and therefore we won't have fellowship with him. Lots of things. That's a long... That's we don't want that to happen. That's not how we're going to approach this. We're not going to go from the end. We're going to start at the beginning. If somebody's in trouble, let's go talk to them. Express our concern. I have used it and will keep using it. And the fact that I say it doesn't mean the next time I use it on you... It's not from my heart, because it is, because I saw it, its effect on me during some really dark days. Before, right about the time the countdown before all of my stuff blew up, I had somebody come knock on my door. It's somebody I had taught about Jesus, somebody I had encouraged to come back to the Lord. She knocked on my door. She wanted to encourage me. She wanted to see if I was okay. I didn't take it like that because I was hurting. I was feeling guilty and ashamed, and rightfully so, because what I'd done was horrible. And she wants to talk to me, and I don't want to talk to her. And so I talked to her through the door. I said, no, I don't want to talk. She's crying, and she said, no, really, I need to talk to you. I need to tell you something. I'm not letting her in. I'm not going to... I had been hurt enough. I wasn't going to let anybody else hurt me. Which I'd hurt myself is the point. Finally, she kept crying. And she's a good lady. So I opened the door and she came in. And immediately, man, my shame starts causing me to pull back, cry. And I got my head dropped. And I remember her... stopping me. She grabbed my shoulder, stopped me, and then she picked up my head. She picked up my head and made me look at her, and she said these words. She said, Rex, are you okay? Those words, are you okay? Those words opened up for me, for the first time, somebody cared how I was doing. They weren't there to tell me how wrong I was. I was wrong. But she didn't come to tell me how wrong I was. She didn't come to tell me what the consequences of my wrong would be. Do you know what this is going to mean? You're going to lose your wife, you're going to lose your job, you're going to lose your career, you're going to lose your reputation. No, she wasn't there to remind me of what I was already aware of. She was there to see if I was okay. Folks, that's what gentleness is. That's how we treat people that have been hurting. That's how we treat people that have been hurt by their sins or the sins of somebody else. That's not written in Scripture, but it's a great example for me, and I use it. I try to use it a lot. I'd encourage us. Instead of us trying to get in people's faces and say, what's wrong with you? No. How about we just start asking folks if they're okay? let's find out if there's something they need to tell us, and maybe we can help them. You okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? And maybe, just maybe, we'll be able to help somebody through a tough time. Restore them back to where they want to be, where God wants them to be.